You're listening to the Cubicle to CEO podcast, episode 112. Even if you don't know him by name yet, you've seen and know his work. Today's guest is the CEO of Harmon Brothers, the ads agency behind the most viral video ads in internet history, responsible for turning brands like Poopery, Lumi, Squatty Potty, Aura Brush, and Purple Mattress into household names. Harmon Brothers has collectively driven more than 1 billion views and over $300 million in sales through its groundbreaking social media ads. A man of constant reinvention, Benton's journey to becoming CEO is unconventional and full of surprises. Now, I won't give away the details of his story here in the intro, but what you can look forward to is Benton's highly applicable insights as he takes us behind the scenes on the specific ad strategies that grew their client, Lumi, from $1.5 million in sales to grossing $23 million in just 1 year. You may not grow by over 1,000% revenue in just 1 year, but you too can turn poop to gold, the title of their popular book and podcast, when you implement the gold Benton reveals in our conversation today. Welcome to the Cubicle to CEO podcast. I'm your host and marketing minimalist, Ellen Yin. I'm a first-generation Asian-American founder who profitably grew my business to $1 million by age 26 with no funding or debt. Now, I'm on a mission to share what I've learned to help you scale your own impact and income. Whether you're trying to escape an actual cubicle or breaking out of a figurative box that has kept you stuck, we're giving you access to the best and brightest minds in business on our show every Monday. Listen in as these leaders impart their wisdom, inspiration, and encouragement to empower you to become the CEO of your dream business and life. All right, everyone. We have a very special guest on the show today, someone whose work I've admired for years. You may not know him by face and name, but he is part of the mastermind team behind Harmon Brothers, which is an ad agency responsible for many of your favorite ads on the internet, including Squatty Potty and Purple Mattress and one of my favorites, Lumi, which we will be diving into extensively in today's show. So Benton, welcome.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on, Ellen. It's a pleasure.
Okay, so before we get into the case study today, I have to ask you a little bit about your background because I read on your bio that you were the number two student mechanic in the country in your college years, and you actually started out as an automotive repair mechanic, which blew my mind because I'm like, okay, how did that right translate into this amazing career in marketing? So tell us about your 2 minute story, your 2 minute version of your move from cubicle to CEO.
my PR people must have written that because it sounds kind of generous. The real story is I'm a high school dropout, and you know, I was a high school kid who fell in love with cars, and you know, by the time I was 18, I think I had, you know, bought, fixed, and sold something like 8 different vehicles. And I lived for cars. It was just my passion. Like, I read Motor Trend magazine from cover to cover from the time I was like 11 years old. And I knew every make, model, the pros, cons, horsepower numbers, you name it. Like, I knew all of that stuff. And I remember about halfway through my junior year in high school, I came home from school one day and I was like, Dad, this just feels like such a waste of time. It feels like daycare for the teenagers. And his response totally shocked me. Like, you know, I was expecting him to be like, oh, well, you know, stay in school, you get through it, you know, that type of thing. And he was just like, so leave. I was like, say what? And he's like, if you're wasting your time, leave, go do something more productive.
Wow.
And that was like, not the answer that I was expecting, but it kind of opened up my mind to kind of think outside the box and think, well, what else could I be doing? And so I actually did. I dropped out of high school and I went down to the community college and started taking automotive repair courses down there and just loved it. You know, just eating this stuff up. And partway through one of my classes, my professor one just said, hey, we're holding this repair competition. You should go join it. And I was like, okay, cool. It sounds fun. And so I went and joined this automotive repair competition, and I won at the school level. And so then they sent me up to Salt Lake to compete at the state level. And then I won there. And then they sent me to Kansas City, Missouri to compete at the national level. And I took second place in the nation.
Wow.
And it was like, it was this surreal experience where, like, I knew I loved fixing cars, but I had no idea how good at it I was. And it kind of showed me that all of this passion that I had been pouring into this hobby actually had real value. And from that experience, I ended up getting scholarship opportunities and job opportunities. And I was awarded thousands of dollars worth of tools and all these things. And even though I didn't end up making a full career in automotive repair, like, actually, once I got kind of past the student phase of it and I was just fixing cars on a day-to-day basis, I actually kind of quickly got bored with it. And I was kind of looking for, you know, what's the next thing to pour my passion into. But that experience showed me, you know, a couple of things. One, that I don't have to go like the traditional path. And two, when I really pour myself into something that means something to me and really matters, then the results are just like head and shoulders above anything else that I could ever get if I was just going through the motions of, you know, taking the traditional classes or whatever. And so, you know, I won't bore you with all the details of how I ended up at Harman Brothers, but, you know, eventually I got here, and that principle of like being super passionate about the work that we're doing to this day, like, that's still something that I live by vehemently. And I stress that so much to my team. And so we're often turning down big clients just because there's not enough passion there. I can remember a few years ago, Anheuser-Busch reached out to us, which from an advertiser's perspective is a freaking dream. You know, it's like,
yeah,
beer commercials are usually the funniest, you know, they're willing to take the most risks, do the coolest things. And so from an advertiser's perspective, that's like a dream come true. And I still feel like honored that they reached out to us. But at the end of the day, I don't drink beer, and therefore, like, I can't put my passion behind, you know, promoting beer when I don't even use it. So it would all be kind of like fake. It would be forced. Mm-hmm. And so ultimately, you know, we took a pass on that project. And so when you look at all the successes that we've had from, like you said, we're going to talk about Lumi deodorant to Squatty Potty, Poopery, Purple Mattresses, Chatbooks, all of these big successes, they're products that we actually use and love. You know, they're the type of things that, you know, you get so passionate about that you're just at a party or whatever, you're talking to your friends about them. That's the type of passion that we want to make sure we have whenever we work on something, so that it shows up in the work that we do. And we feel like that also shows up in the results that these campaigns deliver.
I really respect that. I think that is something that takes people sometimes way too long to realize, right? That it's okay to turn down projects, or okay to walk away from money if it's not aligned with what you actually feel excited to show up for on a daily basis. And so I think that's such great advice for people, no matter where in the journey they are. And I also just gotta give a shout out to your dad. I mean, that is so rare, and how lucky and fortunate that you had a parent that really supported your dreams and your desires to do something else, to think outside the box, when you felt like you weren't in the right place in high school.
I appreciate you saying that, because now I'm a dad.
Yeah.
And I see how much bravery that would take. Like, cause from, let's say from the neighbor's perspective, right, I'm this redneck kid who's dropping out of high school to turn wrenches. Like, from a societal perspective, that's like, oh, you've just thrown your life away. Great job. And so I'm sure my dad's peers were kind of looking at me making those decisions through that lens. And so, man, I just take my hat off to my dad, and I appreciate the heck out of his ability to just not care what, you know, society thinks, what his friends think, what the neighbors think. All he cared about was just that I was pursuing what, you know, what was meaningful to me.
Amazing. And I'm not a parent yet, so I can't imagine what that's like, but I think that you're right. Bravery is like a really good word to describe that. I think anyone who kind of walks, you know, off the traditional, like forges their own path and doesn't go down the beaten path, it takes a lot of bravery to carve out this whole new destiny essentially for yourself. And I know that, you know, we kind of skipped ahead to where you're doing work now at Harmon Brothers, but I guess in between you deciding that doing automotive repair was no longer for you, and then, you know, eventually actually joining Harmon Brothers, what was that final leap before Harmon Brothers? Like, what were you doing right before Harmon Brothers, and what made you decide to go work, you know, with this company and now eventually run this company as CEO?
Yeah. So I've kind of had three careers. So we covered the first one, which was automotive repair.
Yeah.
We talked a little bit about the current one, which is Harmon Brothers. The one in between was when I decided to move on from automotive repair, I decided to go to college, you know, start my education or whatever. And I took an economics course, and it just like lit a fire inside of me. Kind of the same way that, you know, cars had been for the decade prior, economics kind of did that for me. And like, well, all my classmates around me were like, oh, this is terrible, I hate my econ class or whatever. I was just like, whoa, this is so cool. And I'm like reading books and just absorbing it like crazy. Mm-hmm. And so I got really into econometrics and statistics, and I kind of became a little bit of a data nerd. And so I started my career first as a statistician at the Census Bureau. And then I got hired by Deloitte to do intelligence consulting in the intelligence community out in Washington, D.C. So kind of the various three-letter agencies that you hear about out there.
Right.
I was doing intel consulting for them. And in the meantime, I was watching what my now partners were doing with video marketing. They had started doing YouTube ads for a product called Aura Brush, which was this tongue cleaner that you scrape your tongue with and it gets rid of bad breath. And I could see that what they were doing was really novel. And I had this sense that I'm like, this is going to make a big impact on the world. I don't know exactly how, but I sensed that it is. And so when they were leaving Aura Brush, they were leaving to go take on a campaign for Poopery. And they needed a data analytics person because kind of the secret sauce is, from a creative perspective, you have a creative idea, but then you test it and you look at the data to find out, you know, is the creative idea actually good or maybe it's crap? Mm-hmm. And so there's this cycle that we go through where it's like, come up with an idea and then test, tweak, and then new idea, test, tweak. And that cycle repeats over and over again. And that's how we end up with this, you know, portfolio of work where we've, you know, just helped dozens of companies grow by tens or hundreds of millions of dollars. And it's because of that formula of testing and tweaking, test, tweak, test, tweak. And so they needed that data person to come in and bring the data expertise to the testing side of that. And so I joined the team. That was back in 2013. And there was four of us. There was Neil, Daniel, Jeff, they're the three Harmon brothers, and then myself, and it just kind of created this magic formula that allows us to take these products that we're passionate about and test and tweak our way into figuring out how to scale them up by tens or hundreds of millions of dollars. So that was kind of my path into Harmon Brothers.
Incredible. I love how you're so casual kind of about your massive, very different career shifts. That's very rare. I've talked to a lot of guests before who have had big career moves, but rarely have I ever met someone who's truly almost like a Renaissance artist. Like you've really captured, you know, and become quite skilled at vastly different skill sets, which is, I think, just hugely admirable. So kudos to you. Okay, so I want to pause for a second and do three quick lightning round questions. Whatever comes to mind, no filter. These are just for fun. So you ready?
Let's do it.
Awesome. Okay, question number one. What was the lowest grade you've ever been given, and what class did you receive that grade in?
I failed calculus the first time that I took it. Then I took it a second time and got like a C minus. And then I took it a third time and got like an A minus or something. And crazy wow. enough, I actually ended up really liking calculus by the third time. But it, boy, I struggled with it in the beginning. I was a calculus knucklehead.
Third time's a charm. That is an insane persistence. I also did poorly in not calculus in honors pre-calc in high school, and I had to retake the class. Unfortunately, my grade did not improve quite as well as yours did, but maybe I needed that third attempt. So that's awesome. Okay, second question. Did you have a nickname that your parents or your friends called you growing up?
Yeah, I had a pretty ironic nickname because I was a scrawny little kid, like always the smallest kid in the class. But my dad called me Big B. And I've kind of continued that on with my son. My son, like me, super small, shortest kid in the class, that type of thing. But his nickname is Big Dog.
Oh my gosh, that's really cute. It's like a family tradition. He's going to have to continue that on with. I love it. All right, last lightning round question. What is your most used emoji?
Probably just thumbs up, as boring as that is. I also use like the hand on forehead quite often where it's like, oh, smack my head.
But that is a good one. I got to say, it's funny. There's like this hot internet debate on thumbs up and whether or not it's like a passive aggressive response. Some people hate it. Some people love it. It always like amuses me when people are like, oh, I use that a lot. Cause I'm like, oh, I wonder like, do people in your life take it well, or do they take it kind of as like a, you know, passive aggressive?
You know, that's probably a really valid question that I'm totally incapable of answering, because the nuances of how people interpret things I say,
yeah,
like it usually goes right over my head. I would say that in terms of emotional intelligence, I'm rock bottom. Like my wife, I married a woman who has incredible emotional intelligence, and she's very tuned in to how people are thinking and feeling and how they're interpreting things being said. And all of that crap just goes right over my head. And so I tend to leave a trail of offenses everywhere I go, but I'm totally oblivious to them.
Well, good thing you have a partner who can kind of, you know, help pick up the slack there. That's awesome.
Right.
I love it. I love it. I love that you really focus in on the data side of marketing, because I mean, I love talking about data. Our audience, our listeners love really kind of getting into the nitty gritty of the numbers, which is why I'm so excited to have you on the show today. And the case study that we previewed at the beginning is Lumi, which if you guys, I'm sure if you exist on the internet, you have seen at some point a commercial for Lumi. It's deodorant. I think what you guys say is deodorant for pits and private parts, right? Like that's kind of like the tagline. And I remember Lumi first caught my eye because on a Facebook, just random day, an ad popped up, and it was, I think it was one of the originals where she's singing like on a bus in Paris in that orange dress. And it's been so cool to see, you know, new versions or new iterations of that commercial come out over the last couple years. What I think is so impressive is the fact that you were able to grow their business in a single year by 1500%. So growing from 1.5 million to 23 million plus in sales in a single year. I got to know, what do you feel like was the missing magic sauce from Lumi's messaging and strategy before they worked with you? Like, what was their target market not understanding about this, you know, revolutionary product that you guys were able to capture and really relay in your initial commercial for them?
Yeah. Great question. So first off, in talking anything about Lumi, I have to give massive shout out and huge kudos to Lumi's founder. You know, Shannon, she took some bold moves that there aren't many entrepreneurs out there who quite have the, you know, the guts to do what she did. So first off, you know, she was an OBGYN and she noticed in her practice that the industry was over prescribing antibiotics to deal with vaginal odors. And she could see that the over prescription of these antibiotics was not only bad from a health perspective, but it was not actually treating, it wasn't a medical condition. It was just a natural condition. And so she decided to kind of go at it from a different angle and say, there's got to be a better way to do this. And so she knew that deodorants were all full of chemicals and perfumes and sometimes metals and, you know, who knows what. And so obviously she would never recommend to a patient like, oh, you know, go get a stick of deodorant and, you know, go rub it on your private parts. She's not going to do that. So she kind of started from a formula, like just thinking what is safe for my patients to put down there, but can actually deal with these odors. And so she went through a ton of testing and experimentation to figure out a formula that worked. And when she found it, it ended up working not just incredibly well, but then she's also like, man, this is way healthier than traditional deodorant. It's also super effective. Why not put it on your armpits? And so she started using it in that way, and it worked so incredibly well there. And so that's when she knew she had this amazing product, and she started, she started taking it to the public and finding, you know, these customers who it was solving a real problem for them and really helping them in a meaningful way. And so, like you said, she grew it to $1.5 million per year, as, you know, just this bootstrapped entrepreneur. And so really what she had done was just amazing. And she knew from that group of customers that they were so passionate about it. She's like, if this group is this passionate about it, then I know I can reach millions of more people. Mm-hmm. And that's when she came to us, and she didn't tell us. I found out after the fact, but she actually mortgaged her home and mortgaged her sister's home.
Wow.
to come purchase like this full nationwide big hero campaign from us. And it's probably fortunate she didn't tell me that, because I would have been like, I don't think you should be taking that kind of risk. I probably would have turned her away, but I didn't know.
Yeah.
And she did it, and it ended up being, you know, a bet that has paid off phenomenally. Because like you said, it grew that first year from $1.5 million to 23 or 24 or wherever it landed in 2019. Yeah, 2018 was 1.5, 2019 was 23, 24, somewhere around there. 2020, I think, was over 40, 45, somewhere around there. And now this year, I don't think I can share actual numbers, but I mean, it's over $100 million this year. So it's just the growth of Lumi has just been, has been phenomenal. So back to your question of what were they missing?
Yeah.
They had the world-class product, but they were missing the world-class marketing. And that's like the super formula of it. So oftentimes people come to us and they think, oh yeah, I just need amazing marketing to sell this really boring, non-differentiated product. And we're like, that's not so interesting to us. We want to combine world-class products with world-class marketing, because that's the formula for hyper growth. And that's essentially what we were able to bring to the table and help Lumi with.
So what aspect of Lumi did you feel like, oh, this is the star of the show? Like, we have to capture this essence in that very first video. And I know that you kind of walked us through how you know, you guys put out an iteration, you look at the numbers, you look at what's working, you scale that. So maybe, like, let's kind of like go back in time if we could, like 2019, right? When you were working with Lumi, you're like, okay, you have a solid, you have an amazing product. The people who already use it love it. Let's pull out this piece and make it the star of the show in the video. And then when you put it out there, was the reaction what you anticipated? How did you look at the numbers, and what spoke to you about, okay, this is a thing we need to scale? Like, if you're able to walk us through that process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been long enough that I won't be able to like dive into the specifics of the testing that we did for Lumi, just because it's too far distant, too foggy in my memory. But yeah, I can talk you through kind of the strategy that we use.
Yeah.
So we like to do what we call a message architecture testing. Mm-hmm. And what we do there is we identify, okay, what are all the value propositions? And so in the case of Lumi, we could say, okay, one value proposition would be more effective than the traditional deodorants. Another value proposition could be it's all natural. Another value proposition could be you can use it on your pits and your private parts and feet and, you know, whatever else, but it's not just for your armpits. And then you can keep going down this list, coming up with all these different value propositions. It can be price, it can be quantity, you know, all these different things. Mm-hmm. And then what we do is we say, okay, let's take each one of those value propositions and let's test it and say, okay, we're going to build some really low cost ads just built around each one of these value propositions. And we're going to put these value propositions out there, and then we're going to see how these value propositions perform with the various different demographics. And inevitably what happens is you end up kind of ranking, which value proposition is the most important. And I can't remember for certain, but I think with Lumi, if I remember correctly, it was, the value proposition was more effective than traditional, but all natural. If I remember correctly, that was the one that kind of rose to the top. Yeah. And of course, pits and private parts was another one that was up there pretty high. But what that allows us to do is we can structure the ad where we highlight the value propositions that are most important, and we spend the most time, give the most focus, put those value propositions up front. And so if you go back and watch the original Lumi ad, like right now I'm just going from memory and I'm guessing, so I'm not actually sure I'm getting these right. But if you go through and you'll see the value propositions that we lead with, those are the ones that rose to the top in the testing.
Fascinating. Okay. Thank you so much for that kind of deep dive into the strategy. Quick clarifying question. When you said you guys kind of come up with a list of value propositions and then you test them and then pick your top ones for the, you know, the video creative, that initial test run, are you still running video creative or are you just doing pure text creative, seeing what resonates and then, you know, storyboarding out the full actual video ad?
Yeah, usually the initial test is just with text. Like we will do tests with videos. We have one style of video that we call labs, or that's short for learning ad blitz, which is another way of saying let's test it cheap before we test it expensive. And so, yeah, we can build these cheap videos that are focused on the different value propositions. So instead of having like the full hero video that has character building and storytelling and attention grabbing stuff, instead we'll just be like, okay, let's just do a really quick, cheap video that focuses on whatever, pits and private parts, or it focuses on price or, you know, value or whatever the case may be, because then we can do the same thing with those. We put them out there and we see which ones rise to the top, and that gives us learnings that we can then take back and apply to the more expensive creative. And it also gives Lumi a bigger portfolio of content to work with, because that's one thing that is different about today than it was, say, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
5 years ago, you used to be able to just put a hero video out there and it was like your one video and you could just drive millions of views to it and millions of dollars in sales. But the algorithms have changed in such a way that it's really hard to just lean into one video without the algorithm kind of determining, oh, this one has been viewed enough, or this one is fatigued.
Yeah.
But when you have a portfolio of content, you can build a strategy that uses the whole portfolio of content. And so those learning ad blitz videos are another way that it's not just for testing, but it's also for building the portfolio.
It's really smart, like killing two birds with one stone, essentially preparing for the
future,
while also strategically testing. Hey, podcast super fans, I have something super exciting to share with you. We just launched our podcast referral rewards program. If you want to be the first to know when a new episode drops, we'd love to text you a quick business tip every Monday morning, along with that week's episode link. Just head to ellenyin.com/superfan to sign up. But that's not where the fun ends. Once you sign up for text, you get your very own unique referral link to share with all of your business besties. And if you get friends to sign up for our podcast text too, you have the chance to earn some amazing rewards like Starbucks on Us, free access to my most popular courses, one of my favorite business books shipped straight to you, and even a chance to ask me one of your burning business questions and be featured right here on the podcast. There's no need to worry about finding your custom link either, because every time you go to the registration page, it will remember your device and have your link ready for you to send out. When all you're doing is sharing a link and a podcast show you already listened to, it's almost too easy to win these rewards. If you want to learn more, check out our rewards highlight on our Instagram at cubicle to CEO, or just sign up now at ellenyin.com/superfan. So one thing that I love about the ads that Harmon Brothers creates is that you guys, I mean, it's like a trademark quality of all of your ads that humor is very much front and center, right? I read the comments. I'm like one of those weird people, probably because I'm a marketer. I love seeing people's feedback to ad creatives because I get some, you know, interesting tidbits of information. And I have to say, every single time I've ever come across a Harmon Brothers produced ad, the comments are overwhelmingly positive and people genuinely say, I stop and watch the full commercial every single time just because it brings me joy, even if they may not even be a customer. So I would love to know how you guys utilize humor as an actual sales strategy, and why did you decide that video marketing was the best medium to deliver that through?
Great question. Let me actually zoom out just a little bit to answer that question, then I can zoom back in.
Okay.
If you go back all the way back to our roots, I think there's like this moment in time that perfectly describes like our genesis. And that actually precedes my time at Harmon Brothers. So when my partner, Jeffrey Harmon, was trying to make an advertisement for that Aura brush, the tongue brush that I mentioned earlier, he came up with this ad that was 2.5 minutes long. And keep in mind, this was right after Google had just bought YouTube. Mm-hmm. And at that point in time, you had these television spots where you could buy ad space for like 30 seconds or 60 seconds, or you had these infomercial spots where it was like 20 to 30 minutes. But at that time, a 2.5 minute ad was like unheard of. It was just this odd duck. Like, where are you going to put that?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It just didn't fit. But Jeff was convinced that it was the right length. He's like, I don't need a fillet full of fluff to extend it out into an infomercial, but I can't shorten it up any further because to really properly convey the value here, I need 2.5 minutes. And so he reached out to the YouTube team, who at that point, they were still, you know, in startup mode. They were trying to figure out, okay, we have this like viral video platform. How do we turn it into an advertising platform that's valuable to businesses? And so Jeffrey reached out to them and said, hey, can you give me a skip button so that the people who want to watch my ad can, and the people who don't want to can just skip it? And YouTube was like, sure, we'll give it a try, see if it works. And so, of course, they went and built the skip ad button. And this was originally just for, you know, this Aura Brush ad. And at that time, I don't think anyone quite wrapped their heads around what a big deal that was. But now here we are, what's it been? It's been like 15 years or something like that. And looking back, I think it was probably one of the most impactful innovations to happen to the advertising industry in a long time.
Yeah.
Because it shifted power from the advertisers, who prior to this could just kind of make whatever crap they wanted to and then just force feed it to a captive audience. But it shifted power from them to the viewers. And now it forces advertisers to think, okay, I actually have to make something that the viewers want, something that they'll enjoy, something that adds value. I need to give them something that's so good that they'll talk about it with their friends. They'll talk about it at the dinner table. And that was like the genesis moment of everything we've ever done since then. And so every time we go into, you know, the creative process of building an ad, we're not going in and asking ourselves like, all right, how do we extract the maximum of value from, you know, from each viewer? Instead, we're kind of taking the opposite approach and saying, how do we add value? How do we put a smile on their face? How do we give them something to talk about, something to share, something to comment, something to make their day better, right? And that is like at the very core of who we are and everything that we do. And so coming back to your question of humor, we don't have to use humor. You know, we've done some ads that are non-comedic, and they work fantastically. It just so happens that humor is probably the best tool on earth for putting a smile on people's faces. Mm-hmm. And humor probably is the most shareable content on the internet. You know, when you think about things that get shared, sometimes controversial things get shared. Sometimes, you know, fear-based messages get shared. Gal, think about the last, you know, year and a half of pandemic life on online, how much fear and controversy and stuff is out there. Like, obviously it's shareable.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, every time you share something that's fear-based or controversy-based, there's a really good chance that either you're going to alienate half of, you know, your circle, or you're going to be, you know, that guy, so to speak, is like, oh, you know,
yeah,
here goes Debbie Downer or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas humor is the exact opposite. It's like humor, you're not going to alienate half of your crowd. You're not going to drag them down. You're actually making their day better. And so that's why we just keep coming back to humor over and over again, because it's just such a phenomenal tool for adding value to people's lives. And at the end of the day, that's the core of who we are and what we're trying to do with every one of these pieces. And it all goes back to like that Genesis moment of like, let's shift power from the advertiser to the viewer.
My mind is blown. I don't know if you're like used to telling that story or if this was like the first time in a while that you've shared that story, but I had no idea that he was responsible for the skip button on YouTube. Like, I didn't know the origination of that feature. And I think we can all thank him for the fact that we do have that ability. Cause I know, I mean, that would suck on YouTube if you had to watch every single advertisement that came through your way. So that just is, that's mind blowing to me. I think that's such a cool origination story. And I think your explanation of how it shifted that power dynamic from the business or whoever was putting up the advertisement to the audience is so relevant. And I think also just something I pulled from your explanation of why you love humor and how you utilize that in your strategy. I think what I'm hearing is humor or anything, you know, with a positive uplifting message, it kind of creates community, right? Rather than, like you said, conflict. And so I think that creating that like bond around something that people love or want to talk about, like you said, with their friends and family, I do think I see why that plays into the effectiveness of your ads and your sales strategies.
I'm sure if we pulled Jeff into the room and asked him about that skip ad experience, I'm sure he would acknowledge people at the YouTube team and other people on the Aurabrush team who kind of contributed to the ideation there. And so it's
sure.
It's probably important to give a shout out to, you know, behind every great idea is usually a team and a collaborative effort. And so I don't want to make it sound like, you know, Jeff was the only genius there, but he definitely played a very important role in that innovation. And that innovation was very impactful.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jeff, for your helping hand in that. And I think that's also just really indicative of like your quality of leadership, Benton. I love how you always bring it back to what is the collective, like what are you guys as a team doing, leading with your core values, leading with, you know, what feels in alignment with you guys, which I think is just awesome. That passion drives everything that you do. I know that Lumi is obviously an inspiration to all of us business owners about risk-taking, about the massive growth that you can have through a really well-told story and message and a world-class product. But for those of us listening at home who, you know, maybe aren't ready to take as big of a step as mortgaging our house, let's say, to hire a huge ads agency. What are the top two or three takeaways from the success that Lumi has had that someone at home could apply to their own, you know, DIY video marketing or DIY ads?
Yeah. So I like to say that as entrepreneurs, we're all on our own poop to gold journey. And when I say poop, I'm referring to kind of the obscurity that we all start in, but we all have these hopes and desires of one day, you know, reaching what I call the gold of becoming a household name that people know and love and recognize and trust. And like you mentioned, Lumi is on their own journey. You know, Lumi is not yet a household name like a Nike or an Apple or something like that. But I would still argue that they're well on their way. You know, they're doing the right things in terms of, you know, world-class product, world-class customer service, world-class marketing, et cetera, storytelling, character building, all of those things. They're on their way. But they also started in obscurity, just like you and me and all the other entrepreneurs. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that when we're starting out, we don't need to act like Nike or Apple, who are clear over on the other side of the spectrum, nor do we need to act like Lumi or Purple, who are somewhere in between. We need to act like a startup. And that can mean that, hey, we can have ads that are really low budget. We can have ads that are scrappy. We can focus on just getting those initial sales to come in the door. And we don't need to worry about all the brand building and all that thing, all those things. You know, when we watch YouTube videos of Gary Vee talking about, oh, it's all about the brand and, oh, you need to be on all these different platforms and everything. Sometimes that can be overwhelming to be like, oh, how do I create content for every different platform? And, you know, how do I do all of this stuff? And we have to stop and remind ourselves that, guess what? Gary Vee has taken years to build up this social media team of, I don't know how many people are on it, but he's probably got 7 or 8 full-time people who are capturing content and editing and posting and all this different stuff. Whereas in the reality for him, it just started out on Twitter. Like all he was doing was it was just a Twitter strategy and it grew from there. And it's totally appropriate for us young, new entrepreneurs who are still living in that obscurity, trying to find our way through it. You don't need to do everything. You don't need to go big budget. You just need to focus on the things that matter. And usually that's, you know, sales. And where it does matter in terms of branding, like just focus on, you know, the first platform that really matters to you. Go try to dominate on one platform before you try to, you know, dominate on 5 platforms or whatever. So that's what I would say. If you're looking for specifics, I would say a great place to start if you're saying, okay, I need to drive those sales. We teach this course at Harmon Brothers University that we call Easy Ads That Sell. And in it, we teach how many, it's like 14 or 15 different ad formats that are all like super low budget, easy to produce, ad formats that actually drive sales. So one of them, for example, we call an explainer testimonial ad. And that this is like crazy simple, but crazy effective. All it is you start a video with a 1 to 2 sentence statement about why your product is different, or it's basically like your super quick elevator pitch to get people to pay attention. And then all you do is follow it up with testimonials that your customers have already written for you. You don't even have to write any ad copy. Your customers have already written it. You just need to go through and find the ones. And then you present, call it 3 to 5, you know, really compelling testimonials. And it's like the simplest ad you could ever produce. You can probably sit down on your couch. You know, you could work with a junior high level, you know, video editor, and you could have an ad ready in 2 hours, and they're amazingly effective. So that's just one example. And we teach, I want to say it's like 14, different ad formats like that. So it's like a super low budget way to get started in driving those sales. And then through driving those sales, you start to work through that poop to gold journey till eventually you get to a point like Lumi where you're ready to really invest into the long-term branding and make yourself memorable and shareable and all those things.
Amazing. Well, you guys, if you're listening to this right now, definitely go check out the course. We'll make sure to post that in the show notes. So if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, just scroll below. It'll be right there, clickable, or go to ellenyin.com/blog and find this, this post with Benton. And we'll make sure all the links are there as well. Also, Poop to Gold, awesome book by the Harmon Brothers. So go, you know, on Amazon or wherever you buy your books and make sure you order that. I love that you gave like some tactical wisdom and then also just some high level, you know, mindset work around what it looks like to be successful and scrappy when you're at, you know, at the start, when you are a startup. And I couldn't agree more with everything you said, Benton. I think that minimalism, I call myself a marketing minimalist because I really don't buy into the whole, you need to post every day, you need to be on every platform shtick that's so widely spread in this industry. I think more than anything, it really becomes a distraction. And we do take things, we do take advice, I think, from successful people, oftentimes out of context. Like you brought up Gary Vee. I thought that was a great example of how, yes, Gary is able to, you know, tout that advice and he's able to successfully execute on it, but it's also because he has a huge budget and big team to be able to support him in doing all of that. So when you're a one man or one woman show, and you're starting out with maybe $0 in your business bank account, then you need to think about problems differently and think outside the box. And so I feel like that was really, really great wisdom for all of our listeners. All right. Awesome. Well, Benton, thank you so much for your time. I'm going to end with one final question that I ask all of my guests, and that is, what does being a CEO mean to you?
It's interesting because I'm a first-time CEO. And so I've been on a discovery journey to try to figure out what being a CEO means, you know, at least for me and in my role. And I have identified three areas of focus. And anything that falls outside of those three areas, I try to delegate away because I feel like it's the three areas that I focus on are the only core things that my time and efforts should be going to as a CEO. And the three things are, the first one is evangelizing the mission of Harmon Brothers, both internally and externally, which our mission is to share better stories. And so that can be through ads, but it can be other formats as well. You know, we're about to launch our first television series, and eventually we want to do movies, and wow. we're a storytelling company. For the record, Walt Disney and Pixar both started in ads too. So we're trying to follow in their footsteps and make a transition from ads into TV and movies.
I didn't know that. That's really interesting. My sisters are in film. They want to be producers. And so that is really interesting. Thanks for that little trivia fact.
Yeah. If they make it, there's a good chance they'll get a lot of reps in ads before they make it in other areas of film. But so that's area number one. Area number two is just paving the future for Harmon Brothers. So I'm the one who needs to be stepping up out of the weeds and looking at the big picture and make sure that we're going down the path. So when we talk about, you know, we want to make TV and movies, I have to make sure that we're laying the foundation now for that to be able to come to pass, you know, in the next years. And then the third and final piece that I focus on is just removing obstacles for my team that they can't remove for themselves. Mm. And you know how occasionally there are things where like, you know, somebody will come to this obstacle that they either don't have the authority to deal with, or they're not equipped to deal with it or whatever. That's when as CEO, I need to step in and say, okay, what barriers do I need to remove to make sure that they can be successful? And so anytime I'm looking at what to do as a CEO, I ask myself, does it fall within those three areas? And if not, who do I need to delegate this to so that I can stay focused where I need to be focused? I don't know if that answered your question or not.
It does.
Probably awfully specific, but
No, we love specific here. And I was actually just about to say, for a totally off the cuff question, I feel like that was an incredibly insightful answer. And it actually kind of inspires me to ask all of you listeners this week, I would love for you, after you've finished this episode, to DM me or DM the Harmon Brothers on Instagram and share your big three as a CEO. What are the three areas of focus that you want to stay laser sharp focused and driven on in 2021 and beyond? So Benton, thank you so much for all of your wisdom, all your great stories today. I feel like you are doing number one, evangelizing Harmon Brothers mission even through today's podcast. So I really appreciate your time. I look forward to seeing how Harmon Brothers continues to grow, especially in the movie and TV space. And make sure, if you guys are listening, to again check out Harmon Brothers on all their social channels. It will be linked below. Thanks, Fenton.
Thanks for having me.
This week's listener shout out goes to hashtag motherhood-ish. And they wrote, Gwen Lane inspired. Just listen to Gwen Lane share her story from blogging to building a profitable business with brands and subsequently advising and educating content creators. My greatest takeaways, have faith in your fabulousness, invest in yourself, get out of your own way. Mindset matters. Those are such great takeaways. I love Gwen. She is a dear friend of mine. And if you haven't listened to Gwen's episode yet, make sure you return to episode 110 after you finish listening to this one. And if you haven't left us a review and rating yet on Apple Podcasts, it would mean the world if you took 30 seconds today to do so. You can leave your Instagram handle in your review. You can leave your website. We want to give you a shout out. We want to use our platform to bring more visibility to your business as well. So make sure you do that so we can give you a shout out in our next episode. Thank you again for tuning in to the Cubicle to CEO podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, you can help support this podcast in one of three ways. One, post a screenshot of this episode to your IG story and tag me at Miss Ellen Yin so I can repost you. Two, share this podcast with a friend. And three, leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts so we can continue to grow and reach more listeners. Please make sure to also subscribe so you don't miss out on new weekly episodes coming to you every Monday. And friends, until next time, keep dreaming big.